The following program is intended as an educational program, not as investment advice or as a recommendation to buy, sell, or participate in any investment vehicle, product, offering, or strategy. Investment advisory services are offered through Turning Point Financial, a registered investment advisor. Any references to specific securities, investment vehicles, or strategies are intended only as examples, not as recommendations. All investments involve risk, including the possibility of losing money. Welcome to Money and Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720, where every week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. Do you ever wonder how your money and the things you own are actually helping you to live out what you really feel called to in your heart? There's so much peace of mind when you can sense that your money is aligned with your values and convictions. And there's really peace of mind when you know deep down that your financial goals are in sync with your values and convictions. There is so much potential for anxiety and worry and, you know, staying up late and sleepless nights. And when you sense that that alignment is just not present.
That's right, James, but that can be easier said than done. There's so much financial information coming at us every minute of every day. It can actually be overwhelming. Terminology, ideas and philosophies, various competing principles, and of course, financial products and services. Keeping all of this information straight can be downright confusing, possibly even scary.
Yeah, and when you're confused or scared, you simply aren't making good decisions. And that can keep you from being all that God wants you to be, and it can hurt you pretty badly as well. Well, welcome to episode 48, Money and Mission. I'm James Good.
And I am Eric Terrio. Each week, in the first part of our show, we'll talk about some current financial events so you'll have a better understanding of what some of the terminology and events actually mean.
And then part of the way through the show, we get to my favorite part. Drum roll, please. That's right, the weekly puzzler. And that's just a brain teaser, right? A puzzle. And we'll share it with you, and hopefully it'll be as interesting to you as it is to us.
That's right. So let's jump into our show this week, James. And in our week in review, what did you think were some financial news highlights throughout this past week?
Well, you know, as we're recording today, we are at T-Day minus two, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Tax Day minus two. Like we're
CPAs across the country are coming up for air.
or they're like zoned out. Yeah. They're not coming up for air yet. At this point, they're in recovery mode,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, if you have a CPA and especially if the CPA is doing a great job, you just know, you should like send them a thank you note or actually in the first week of March,
uh-huh.
that's when it's really hitting it, right? In the first week of March, stop by your CPA's office with a bag of coffee and a box of donuts and just, you know, with a little card that says something like, with sympathy for the loss of your time.
Yeah. Right? Reminds me like when nurses were working during COVID.
That's right.
I feel bad for them.
Yeah, that's right.
They're on the front lines during tax season.
That's right. But, you know, this is a way that we can kind of be a blessing to the world around us.
Mm.
And, you know, help our CPA. The other thing you can do to really be a blessing, like to your CPA, is to keep your numbers in order all year long, right?
A shoebox of receipts is not a good gift.
That's right.
To receive.
You know, hi, I'm bringing you this box.
Yeah. Make sense of this because I don't even know.
That's right.
It's my business.
That's exactly right. This is. I mean, is this really a headline? I don't know, but it's a big deal every single year.
Yeah.
Right? I heard somebody say one time that the single most searched for document in the whole entire world is Form
1040. Is it? Wow.
That's right. Because people search for it, right? Trying to figure out.
And you're legally required to every year, so.
That's exactly right.
That makes sense.
Unless you don't have enough income, to actually file a tax return. But and then, of course, every state has their own. So if you do business and you're doing business in multiple states and you've got all those states to file and the list just goes on and on.
So now's the time, right, to be thinking about next year.
Next year, yeah. Oh, now's the time, right? You may not want to be, your CPA's, zoned out. He or she is zoned out, trying to recover, and you're just kind of glad the whole thing is over. But now is the time to really be thinking about next year.
That way you don't find yourself in a hole, because when you come to him in March or the first week of April saying, how can you fix this now?
That's right.
It's a lot harder.
Well, when you do that, there's nothing that can happen.
Right.
Right? It's too late. It's already done. So the time to be preparing so that it's not a big problem when the headline rolls around is to be doing it now.
Mm-hmm.
And, a good financial advisor will help you. They'll work with your CPA. I know we do that all the time with our clients, right? Mm-hmm. And the firm we work with, there's actually a tax department.
Yeah,
right?
Our current clients.
That's right. It's so important to be working together like that so that it's not just like, oh, I've got my investments running over here. It's going to drop into my tax return. It sure will.
They really tie together.
That's right. Yeah, they really tie together.
And depending how you have your investment structured, it can really land on that tax return differently.
It really can. So the tax brackets, we should talk about tax brackets.
Sure.
For sure, that's going to be something that, will keep everybody awake.
Yeah. Nope.
Right.
Grab your coffee.
That's right. So you can find tax bracket numbers on the IRS's website, www.irs.gov. You can also go to our website, www.wealthdevelopmentcouncil.com. And when you're on that website, you go to client tools in the toolbar at the top. And in the drop-down box, there's a link that says key numbers. And then you can pick up this little cheat sheet right there. And it has all the different tax brackets on it for 2025. So if you're married and you file jointly and your income is up to $23,850 per year, then you are in the proverbial 10% tax bracket. And if you have more than $23,850 but not as much as $96,950, then you're in the 12% tax bracket. And that means that each little dollar in the new tax bracket gets taxed at a higher rate. So the simplest way to remember that is just that, we have it, income and wealth, and they
want it.
Yeah. We have it and they want it.
They want to move our cheese.
That's right. But the more income you have, the more on a percentage basis that gets taken.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think this whole tariff thing back in the day, we keep hearing, oh, we used to have tariffs and the whole government would run by tariffs instead of having an income tax. But I actually think back in the day when the income tax was first introduced, the way they sold it to the American people
was it World War I?
Yeah. 1916.
Yeah.
Right. I think the way they sold it to the American people was, hey, everybody is paying tariffs. Everybody has to pay that cost. And if we introduced an income tax, only a few people are going to have to pay it. Because the original income tax...
How did that work out?
Yeah, the original income tax was supposed to be that only the richest people would wind up paying about 1% of their income. And, there's a lot of water that went over the dam since then.
Yeah.
That's right. But I think that was the whole framework at the time, that we want to do away with tariffs, and only the wealthy people are going to have to pay this income tax. And anyway, here we are today.
Well, lovely dreams.
That's right. Yeah. So, but there are several places. So just, we kind of referenced here, the more income you have, the higher the percentage is that you wind up paying on the dollars that are in that next higher tax bracket.
Hmm.
Right? But that's not the only place where you get charged more just because you have more income.
Where else?
Well, Medicare.
Yeah, that ties in.
That's right. So let's say that you're 65 or older and you've filed for Medicare. If you go to Medicare.gov, that's the website the government maintains to talk about Medicare. You just click on one of the drop-down boxes to see how much does Medicare cost me. Mm-hmm. Of course, Medicare has all these different parts, and we don't have time to get into all of that. But Part B is typically what gets the cost of that gets deducted out of your Social Security check. So there, if you are, again, married, filing jointly, and you have income of $212,000 or less for the year, then your monthly Medicare Part B cost is $185 a month.
Mm-hmm. And as you go up the brackets, it looks like it increases?
If you go up the brackets, like...
So yeah. Anything above $212,000 to $266,000, shows here the cost of Part B Medicare would be $259, up from $185.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you go over $266,000 of income, you pay $370 a month. And if you go over $334,000 of income, then you pay $480 a month.
So it's like a progressive impact.
It's like a progressive impact. Mm-hmm. That's right. This is one of the reasons why this only sounds like a small line item maybe, but this is one of the reasons why it's a good idea as you're planning towards retirement income and to try to structure and plan your investments and your income so that at least some of your income is tax-free.
Yes.
During retirement years.
Because it just seems like $100 here, $100 there, but it really adds up over a couple-year period.
It really does. I mean, let's say you're in that spot where you're paying almost $500 a month for Medicare. That's $6,000 a year, right?
Oh boy.
Times two if you're filing jointly. So.
Ouch.
Yeah. So anyway, tax time, it's, again.
What's the one thing they should take away?
One thing they should take away, plan. Have a good relationship with a financial planner that can help you organize your finances to pay taxes at the most efficient way possible.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, let's take a quick break. We're going to listen to some words from our supporters. You're listening to Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720.
Welcome back to Money and Mission, where we talk every week about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. I'm James.
And this is Eric.
And we really, you know, we ran across this book called The Eternity Portfolio.
Mm-hmm. And Illuminated.
I'm sorry?
The Illuminated.
The Illuminated. That's yep. Right. The Illuminated version. And this book has just, it's a powerful book. It's a powerful message.
And the author is Alan Goddard.
Yeah.
Alan Goddard.
Along with special authors, I mean, contributing
providing
authors.
Commentary
that's
throughout.
Right. That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we want to begin with a story because we've talked on this podcast. We talk all the time about the importance of aligning values with our planning and our money. But and so we want to cover this book. I don't, you know, there's bands out there that do covers and
we plan to cover it over two episodes.
Probably.
So this will be part one.
That's right.
And then next week we'll finish up and recap and provide our insight in part two.
That's right. But we ask this question all the time about your money and your stuff helping you to actually live out what you feel called to.
Money in mission. Mm-hmm.
And that is just such a powerful question to be looking at and doing the soul searching to say, am I doing with my stuff, the stuff that God has entrusted to me, am I doing with that what he's really called me to do? So let's just, you know, this, I want to read the first couple of pages here. There's a great story, an analogy, I think taken straight out of the pages of the Bible, or at least paraphrased a little bit. There once was a wealthy man who departed on a very long journey. He planned to be gone for an indefinite period of time, maybe a few years, maybe even a few decades. In preparation for his extended absence, he called three of his trusted financial managers and divided his assets among them. "Take this money," he said, "and use it to further my interests." So the wise owner knew the abilities of each of the managers, and he divided the funds accordingly. We'll make up some names here. To Charlie Wise, he gave $5 million. To Sarah Prudent, he gave $2 million. And to Jeffrey Short, he gave $1 million. Hopefully there's nobody out there, you know, with those names. Anyway, confident, though, that his affairs were in order, he set sail and was not seen again for many, many years. So Charlie and Sarah set to work immediately, laying out several plans for different investment ventures. Charlie had this great idea that the owner had given him about starting franchise operations for the owner's business. And so he did that. The owner's product was amazing, and it really sold itself. And those that had a need for this product just kept coming, and they couldn't help but introduce it to their friends and their acquaintances. And Charlie sent daily reports to the owner, who was nobody knew where, but Charlie was, you know, communicating with him by phone, sending him emails, and all that stuff. So over the years, Charlie had partnered with others affiliated with the owner to establish a worldwide distribution network for the product. So he really took that franchise operation and just grew it. Business was booming and profits were really starting to accelerate when the owner returned. Now, Sarah spent a good amount of time studying written instructions that the wealthy owner had left behind. And after sending some emails back and forth to him on some initial strategic issues, she felt confident that she was headed in the right direction with her investment. So she developed a marketing division for the owner's main product and gave away free samples and promoted goodwill and interest in the owner. Sarah was in constant communication. She sent texts and emails and was able to market his true persona so effectively. Sales began to flow, and although Sarah's division did not see all the results directly, she knew from the company field reports that she was having an enormous impact. It seemed like they were just getting started when the owner returned. Now, Jeffrey was so excited about the prospect of $1 million, and he had $1 million. He was like, "Wow, look what the owner gave me. The world is at my disposal now." He seemed to recall some vague instruction about the owner's interest, but Jeffrey was not much of one for communication, and he just didn't have time to read any of the owner's written instructions. "If he's going to be away for such a long time," he thought, I really need to earn a living, right? And who knows when or if he's even planning to come back, because he didn't really make any of those announcements. Well, I don't know. These thoughts were rolling through his head. So Jeffrey set aside most of the money in a safe deposit box at the bank, and he used some to start a personal business that became pretty successful in its own right, but it was Jeffrey's business. Every now and then, someone would mention to him his responsibility as a manager of the owner's money. Then he would start feeling a little guilty, and so he would return a little bit of what he was using to the safe deposit box. He figured that in a few more years, there would be an opportunity to focus on the owner's investment. But you know how time goes by. It just passed so quickly, and all of a sudden, this announcement came through that the owner had returned. And Jeffrey was like, "Oh my goodness." Charlie could hardly contain his excitement. At first, he said to the owner, I wasn't sure how your big idea would ever be successful, but the more we talked and the further things went, the more I bought into the whole strategy. And he handed over a bank statement that showed $10 million in the corporate account. The owner said, well done, my friend. You have managed my $5 million so effectively, and it is now $10 million. You could have enjoyed a lot of smaller things along the way, but I think you'll be pleased with what is in store for you. The owner explained the new and greater responsibilities he had for Charlie and the enormous reward that he had set aside for his faithful stewardship of his investment. Charlie was speechless, but he managed to stammer, it seemed like so much for the effort I expended with your money. Seeing Charlie leave the owner's office with a dazed smile on his face, Sarah was a little apprehensive. She quietly handed over a financial statement for her division with $4 million showing on the balance sheet. It seems kind of small after all these years, she began. But the owner interrupted her with a wave of his hand. Oh, on the contrary, Sarah, you have done really, really well. This is an excellent return for my investment, and yet you didn't know that even a fraction of what has accrued to my financial empire as a result of your diligent efforts. Sarah was thrilled as the owner explained the vast treasure that was hers, along with new and greater roles in company management. Well, upon hearing of the owner's return, Jeffrey had scrambled to pull together the $1 million that the owner had entrusted to his care, which was in a safe deposit box. And it seemed so small after all these years that he had the bank give it to him in bags of fives and tens so it would actually look a little bit bigger and more significant. And so he came to the owner and the excuses began. He said, here it is, all $1 million. I knew that you were a ruthless business person, that you don't take failure lightly. It kind of scared me a lot. And so I kept all of your money safe in this safe deposit box over here. And now you can have it back. The owner was furious. What do you mean? He said, Jeffrey, you didn't do anything. You just stuck the money in a safe deposit box and there it sat. Even if you had deposited it in the bank,
would have got some interest.
It would have got some interest at least. And I could have earned something. I had great things planned for you, but you basically forfeited all of that because this is paltry, no effort at all. Action that you took. So the owner motioned to guards that he had standing around. He said, take away the money from Charlie and throw him out on the street. Oh, he said, no, take the money away from Jeffrey and give it to Charlie and throw Jeffrey out on the street. He is never again going to work with me and I will never, ever forgive him, you know, for the mismanagement, the total mismanagement of the stuff that I gave him. So ends this, you know, little paraphrase of the tale of three managers. I think I didn't quite hit it exactly the way it says it in the book, but it's a paraphrase from,
I think we've talked about it before.
The parable that Jesus
dug a hole and
that's right.
Yep.
The parable that Jesus told in Matthew 25, 14 to 30. And the book that we're going to be covering here over the next few segments is called The Eternity Portfolio, and it really talks about how you can structure your own financial planning, your own investments, and in a way that reflects the call that God has on your life.
Yeah. No, I think that was a great book, and It's crazy that we'll work so aligned with and with such subordinates, right, for a company that we work for, but not for God.
Mm.
And it's crazy how hard we stay aligned with those principles, but it's because we have to see that boss at the next meeting. We're accountable.
That's right.
In your face, and everyone gets real loose because God is, he's there all around, but you only make it as important as you allow it to be. And if you don't value that, the judgment and being aligned, then you're not going to be as committed as some folks are.
That's right. So we want to spend some time unpacking some of the principles that are found in this book. But if you'd like to get a copy of it, you can find it on Amazon. And again, it's called The Eternity Portfolio. The author is Alan Gotthard, and it's spelled G-O-T-T-H-A-R-D-T.
That's right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we will jump in to The Eternity Portfolio. You're listening to Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio.
Welcome back to Money and Mission, where each week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical principles and wisdom. I'm James.
And this is Eric.
And we are here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720.
So let's jump into our next segment, James.
Yeah, we just finished talking about this, the tale of three managers.
Mm-hmm.
And
it was a great update to that parable, right?
Yeah, great update. And just in which those three managers had some responsibility for the owner's investments while the owner was away. And which really, and we're covering again a book called The Eternity Portfolio. I just love that little pun, right? We're covering a book.
Yeah.
Okay. But we really should talk a little bit about, first of all, in chapter one, the book talks about, and we should talk about it here, how a faithful manager actually invests. And I think really it's important to note that investing begins with values.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It really, like, we could say your investments reflect your values, whether you like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, we've talked about the importance of aligning your investments with your values. But as we were talking about this, we realized it really doesn't matter. I mean, your investments do reflect your values.
That's right. Jesus told us. He said, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also.
That's so right.
Where you put your money is what you care about and what you value and what you don't not mind putting your money in, at least.
That's right. You know, when you set up your current investment portfolio, you had certain choices to make.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think back over the choices and how you made those choices, maybe there were questionnaires that you filled out and so on and so forth. The way you answered those questions reflects what's important to you,
mm-hmm.
reflects your values. Those ideas are things that are important to you. How you go about pursuing your goals is also a reflection of your values. This is a real look in the mirror kind of thought, because investing is only meaningful in terms of your vision and your mission and your, well, as we talked about a number of episodes ago, your definition of success.
That's right. And that's different for a lot of folks. We've had guests come on where they felt called to different missions, homelessness, sex trafficking. Having your values, having that solid foundation is important.
That's right. I mean, think about this, really. We have to let this sink in. When Tom Monahan founded Ave Maria University, his definition of success informed the choices that he made, right? We had the Mercy School Sunflower Seed Oil Project. That was episode 3.
Yeah, with Samuel and Kathy.
That's right. Samuel Kogundu. And their vision for what they're doing there at the Mercy School with the sunflower seed, their vision informed the it informs the choices they make. The reason that Samuel came here to the States trying to raise money was because he had a project going on over there. The reason Tom Monahan founded Ave Maria University is because he had a vision for what education should be. The reason Dave Hook set up Project Lamplight is because he had a vision and he had defined something that he wanted money to be doing like that. So in the same kind of way, when we say that, you know, God gives you a mission and a vision, a faithful manager there, then as faithful managers, we are called to organize our stuff in light of what God defines as being successful.
That's right. And that can, that's a strategic process.
It is a strategic process.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, the one thing really that anyone listening can take away is that the strategic process really should involve more than just my thoughts about myself.
Oh, sure.
Right.
Most importantly, even more about families, others, God's values.
That's right.
Not what we want.
That's right. So, investing begins with values and what's important to you. And we say that we begin with the recognition that God owns everything. And God controls the distribution of wealth.
And we're just stewards of those resources with our time here on earth.
So we've, you know, I just looked at the phrase that we have here in our notes that, you know, God controls the distribution of wealth. You kind of have to maybe wrestle with that a little bit. You know, don't I earn money myself by, you know, going to work or doing different business deals?
But God blessed you with all those skills.
And the opportunities.
Your natural talents, those connections you make.
And because God owns it all and he blessed us with that, then we, at the end of the day, are going to have to give an account of our stewardship and what we've done with that.
Like Jeffrey with his safety deposit box.
That's right, like Jeffrey with his safety deposit box. Time is short and eternity is long.
Yeah. You know, that reminds me, remember that video I showed you the other day about Pastor Francis Chan?
Right.
So he's up on stage. He's got a really long rope, from one end of the stage to the other. And at the end of the rope, there's a little bit, about 3-4 inches of red tape. And he's like, this red tape represents your time here on this earth.
Right.
He's
so like, this rope is like hundreds of yards right?
It's just looping around, going all over the place. And he's like, and everyone is stressed out. He's like, I'm going to work so hard here. And once I get to this little piece of the red tape, I'm going to be comfortable. I'm going to retire and I'm going to do this and that. And the point of it, he's like, what about all this? What about the rest of the rope, eternity, all this time you're going to have and you're worried about the tape?
Yeah. That's right.
And that really puts it into perspective.
It does.
Eternity is long.
It does, yeah. But we do. I mean, we have this tendency to approach our investments in light of the 3 or 4 inches of red tape. And we really need to kind
That's our test.
That's our test. That's right.
The tape part is our test.
That's right. So the pursuit of material riches is not a valid goal in and of itself. It really, the, you know, stuff is what we utilize to get things accomplished. And if we're on a mission, if we're on God's mission, then that's the whole point of that. God has two objectives for money, investing in family and investing in others.
Yeah. I know it sounds a little specific, but if you think about it, that's everything.
That is
your family and then all others around you who are still God's children.
That's right.
If you're putting your money in those two directions, I can't see how you're going wrong.
That's right. So that's, you know, really chapter one, a few of the ideas that are in chapter one of the Eternity Portfolio.
And then chapter two, they talk about the ultimate investment.
The ultimate investment.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the question, I guess, is aligning with God's priorities, is that an obligation or an opportunity?
I guess depending to where you've got to in your life with your spiritual side, because a lot of people feel, you know, it's an obstacle, an obligation they feel like they have to do, but it's truly an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
It is an opportunity to do good, to connect with others, and do God's will.
Right. Now, it's an obligation as well.
Yeah, because God told you to.
God told you to. Right. So it's an obligation and an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's kind of like, you know, I accepted this position as chief investment officer at Turning Point Financial. And because I accepted that, there are some obligations that go along with that.
Mm-hmm.
But there are opportunities that go along with that as well. So it's probably a both and kind of thing, don't you think?
Yeah.
That the opportunity is an obligation and the obligation is an opportunity as well.
And I know when they're talking about the ultimate investment in the book, it poses the question, does Scripture provide a mandate for maximizing this ultimate investment opportunity?
Well, the Apostle Paul thought so.
Yeah.
Right? As he raised money in first century churches, he was thinking about the investment return to the giver.
Mm.
In Philippians, I believe he said that he was telling people to give.
Yeah. But the important part, he said, not that I seek the gift itself, but I seek profit to which increases your account.
Right.
And that's very important.
Well, it's time for my favorite part of the show, our weekly puzzle.
All right, let's have some fun with this.
Last week, I thought last week's was great, last week's puzzle. When I take 5 and add 6, I get 11. But when I take 6 and add 7, I get 1. What am I?
What are we?
A clock.
Oh, a clock.
Clock, that's right.
Alrighty. So this week's puzzler is, what number do you get when you multiply all of the numbers on a telephone's number pad?
Okay, 1.
I know what it is instantly.
You know what it is. Yeah. Instantly?
Oh, yeah.
Instantly.
Yeah. Thinking of the numbers on the pad, because there's one little trick.
Yeah, there's one little trick. Okay. What number do you get when you multiply all of the numbers on a telephone's number pad? If you think you know the answer, send your answer to radiopuzzle@wealthdevelopmentcouncil.com, and we'll read the correct answer on the show next week.
That's right. You are listening to Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio, WHYF, AM 720. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Money and Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF, AM 720. Each week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical principles and wisdom. I'm James.
And this is Eric.
And we are working through
the Eternity Portfolio.
That's right. A book called The Eternity Portfolio. Illuminated.
Illuminated.
Illuminated. That's right.
I think that's from the commentary, maybe.
I'm not sure. I don't know. But it's a great book. The author is Alan Gotthard, and Gotthardt. And you can look up his book on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where I got it. But so we're just kind of taking some time to discuss the topics that are in this book. It's a powerful book. If you have an opportunity to buy it and read it, we'd really recommend it to you. And so we've talked about now, you know, how a faithful manager invests And we talked about how all investing reflects your values, whether you like it or not, and how...
Yeah, and then chapter two, we talked about, is it an obligation or an opportunity?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And we said it's kind of both.
Mm-hmm.
Really. But the value in, you know, getting into chapter three of the book, the value of being intentional.
Mm.
Right.
We talked about that too.
Yeah. I mean, this follows good financial planning anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Where when you make a financial plan, you are being intentional.
Mm-hmm.
You're working at accomplishing some life goals and financial goals.
Being intentional, you're focusing your time, and also being intentional, you're not allowing your time to be wasted.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right. But the value of being intentional is that planning has an opportunity to maximize giving, like not just maximizing what we're trying to get for ourselves, but it can maximize giving.
Mm-hmm.
And being intentional then and having a plan that involves giving means you're going to sit and think through exactly what you're giving to.
Sure.
And why you're giving and how much you're giving. And so planning then also leads to more effective giving.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Sure.
Yeah. It can maximize giving and it can lead to more effective giving.
And planning also makes it easier to say no, right? I mean, when you have a goal in mind and you're committed and you're being intentional, you're not just going with the flow with whatever's going on around you. You're staying focused with your eye on the ball.
That's right. You have some things you're saying yes to, and you're saying yes on purpose, and you're saying no on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Because the things you're saying no to are simply not in the plan that you've laid out.
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds so elementary, right? but sometimes it really...
A lot of people have a hard time saying no, though. They really do.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I've experienced that a lot. Whether it's for like social reasons or people get uncomfortable in certain situations or if they're unsure, right? They don't have that plan. So they're like, maybe this will get me to where I'm trying to go.
Right.
And they haven't planned it out and realizing, you know what, that's going to put you in a hole.
That's right. Yeah. Well, planning also can make you a cheerful giver.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's easy sometimes if we're giving to feel like, oh my goodness, I'm giving because I have to.
Mm.
And suddenly I'm not cheerful in my giving.
Mm-hmm.
But what if giving was something that you planned for?
And is a result of good planning because you have money to give.
That's right.
So you're happy. Like everyone loves to win.
That's right. And so you now have, I mean, part of achieving this goal that you have is that you're able to give.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of reason to be excited.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? We have accomplished our giving.
And when you can see the good things that are done with your money, your hard-earned money that you planned well with, and seeing the good things that are done, that will only make you more cheerful.
That's right. So giving incorporated into your planning, your wealth management plan and your financial plan puts you on track for achieving. Again, it's a way of aligning your values and your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Planning also helps you to understand where faith begins.
Mm. Mm-hmm. You have to go back to those principles.
You do.
Why are you giving? Mm-hmm. Why are you helping? Why are these things important? And those are the seeds that God is trying to plant for us.
That's right. That's exactly right. So I do think there's biblical guidance for successful giving. And, you know, honestly, this is a topic for myself even that I feel like I'm going to have to dig a little deeper and unpack for that. But the Bible talks about a motive. Right? Now, I mean, you in your notes here, you said motive question mark.
I figured you could speak on that a little, yeah. I figured that was sufficient.
Yeah.
I mean, there's principles, right?
But it does. It begs the question, why are you giving? right? I mean, I don't know if you remember the story in the Bible where Jesus was standing in the temple and all these wealthy people were coming in and they were throwing some money in the box and everybody could see and they were all so proud of themselves because they were getting so much money, right? And here comes this widow who really did not have anything and all she had was 2 pennies and that's what she put in. And Jesus looked at his disciples and said, that woman gave more than all those people.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they quite got it. And sometimes we don't quite get it either, you know, because it's easier to look at a bigger pile and say, wow, that person gave more, that person had more. Just like the three managers that we talked about, he got millions of dollars more than I did, right?
So, but proportionately.
Proportionally, that's right. So what could I possibly do? What effect could my planning have? I've just got this little bit but motive is tremendously important. And God looks at your heart, right, in that. So, and then of course the methods that are given or methods that are used.
I think that could be just straight giving cash,
mm-hmm.
charitable donations.
Right.
It could be setting up universities like Ave Maria University, dedicating your resources to mm-hmm. a good cause. I think there's different ways to be able to give.
That's right.
Not just give money, but give back. Give what you have, your resources, your talent, your money, your time.
That's right. And clearly, you know, the details that we have to work with in our country today, I mean, we have a totally different tax code, for example, than the Roman Empire had when Jesus was walking, when the Bible was written, or any of the other economic scenarios that were going on when any other pieces of the Bible were written. The details that we have to work with, the financial tools, the mechanisms are different, but the principle is still the same,
mm-hmm.
right? It really makes sense to understand those tools that we have to work with and then structure that in a way that's why we plan. That is exactly why we plan.
So let's just step back and take like an overview
mm-hmm.
of the Eternity Portfolio Strategy.
Right. Well, like anything else, like any other portfolio or any other piece of your portfolio, you have to, first of all, create a reason for it. So if there's money that you have set aside for short-term living expenses, well, the purpose of that money is short-term living expenses, right? There's a plan for that money. If there's a piece of your portfolio that's set aside for retirement, then that is there for retirement. If you have a piece of your portfolio that's set aside for education expenses, right? So you have pieces of your portfolio with goals for each one of those pieces. And so defining the goal and saying, look, here, there's a piece of my investments that is going to be set aside as the eternity portfolio. You've now created a reason for why money is in that bucket. And then you need to fund those buckets,
mm-hmm.
right? You can say, hey, I'm setting aside money for college education expenses. That is part of my planning. But if you never do anything about it, if you never put any money there, then it just doesn't happen. So it's one thing to talk about it, but it's another thing to fund it.
Mm-hmm.
And really, we do believe, and we counsel our clients like this as well, you should know where every dollar is going.
Well, what about the question we hear often, how much should I give, right? Tithing tells us 10%. I know we've had Cody Hobelman on the earlier episode talking about his finish line concept. So let's talk about that a little bit. How much should one give?
How much should you fund into that eternity portfolio?
Exactly.
Right.
For those different buckets, like you were saying.
Yeah. Well, you know, honestly, I do think the answer could be different for different people. What I need to live, the amount of money I need to live and the amount of money I need to fund various goals may be different than what you need to live.
Yes. And the book also, it talks about how the concepts of keeping up with the Joneses or you know, I'm just trying to get ahead in this world. Those types of things, they are mind viruses.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very important not to fall in that trap.
That's right. So, you know, good financial planning software, you know, working with an advisor that is in alignment with your values, these are good ways to determine how much money you need in different pieces of that portfolio. And that can help then to begin to define how much money is set aside into the eternity portfolio.
And what I like about the book, after our next break, we're running out of time, but there's two concepts. How much is good enough? How much is enough for now?
Mm-hmm.
And how much is enough for good?
Mm-hmm.
And the book talks about how much enough for now are our current living expenses, you know, risk management, protecting the assets you have through insurance, income taxes, other living expenses, as James mentioned, investment for retirement, college, and ultimately investing in the eternity portfolio. So that's good for now. And when we come back from our break, we'll talk about how much is enough for good.
That's right.
In funding that portfolio.
Yeah. Well, actually, our break is going to be a whole week, right? Because we are at the end of our time here for today.
Oh, yeah. We'll have to pick that up in part two.
We will.
That's right. Sorry, everybody.
That's all right.
But we hope you're enjoying the book so far. Join us next week as we jump into part two. And thanks for listening. You are listening to Money in Mission on Holy Family Radio.